This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When you go to the movies, you're constantly reminded of how few good roles there are for women. Judy Davis has managed to land interesting roles as strong-willed or eccentric women, and that's probably one of the reasons many women respond to her. The Australian actress was first seen by American audiences in the 1979 film My Brilliant Career, where she played a young woman living in the bush who was determined to become a writer. More recently, Davis starred in Impromptu as the writer George Sand. In Barton Fink, she played the lover and ghostwriter of a William Faulkner-type character. She had a dual role in Naked Lunch as a junkie and a writer. Her new film is Where Angels Fear to Tread, based on a novel by E.M. Forster. She plays a repressed spinster. This is her second Forster adaptation. In A Passage to India, she played the repressed young Englishwoman Adela. There are similarities between both Forster characters.
Most of the characters in Forster's books, as far as I can see, are the victims of a faulty English conditioning, a faulty English education. And both characters have been separated from their sensuality and, in fact, have been dehumanized by the English system and are therefore victims.
It's funny, you know, you describe your new character as being separated from her sensuality. It's such the opposite extreme of another role that our listeners can still see now. And I'm thinking of your roles in Naked Lunch, where you play two different women named Joan. One is married to the character who's very much like William Burroughs, and she's a drug addict. And the other Joan is an expatriate writer who's a sensualist. So these are really contrary to the character that you're playing in Where Angels Fear to Tread.
Yeah.
Is it hard to go back and forth in what I presume was the same year between such extremes?
Well, no. I mean, that's basically what acting is all about, and that's what makes it exciting. and nothing more tedious than to play the same character and over again. I mean, maybe you do it anyway, unconsciously, but hopefully not. It's certainly what I find exciting.
I guess you must feel very lucky that directors see the capability of both extremes in you.
Although, with Where Angels Fear to Tread, it's such a long title, I wish I could shorten it. With that film, they didn't really want me to play Harriet initially, and I had to. They wanted me for another part, but I just fell in love with her when I read the script, so. In fact, I think they saw me a little more sensually as well, or wilder, more eccentric in some way.
Your first movie role, at least the first role of yours I saw you in, was My Brilliant Career. Mm-hmm. And this was an Australian movie about a young woman who didn't want to be a wife. She wanted to be a writer, and she wanted to live an unconventional life. I think a lot of people figured that you really related to that role, but I've read that you really didn't like the role very much.
Well, you know, I was very young when I did that film, and the problem I had with the film, and this is really the purist in me, was that the woman it was actually based on, it was just a little book she wrote when she was, presumably anyway, she wrote when she was 16. So it was her fantasy, it was what she wanted to be. And there was a character of Harry on the horse, that she whipped at one point when he tried to kiss her. And I just thought it was all a bit silly. And the actual woman subsequently in life became homosexual and lived abroad, only returning to Australia. I think she maybe was even in her 50s when she came back. And her whole life was spent writing books about those early years in the bush of Australia, that she never worked through that. I don't think she ever matured as a writer. And I found that fascinating, that you know, what was it in those early years that somehow embittered her, in terms of her writing anyway, and made her rather rigid and fearful. And I think I overcomplicated it, to put it mildly. And poor Gillian, the director, you know, she had trouble dealing with that. But I think I needed to work through that as an actress, probably before the filming started. So I had trouble with the Harry subplot and the Poor Sybilla, she never really would ever have got Harry. Harry just wouldn't have been interested in her. So it was dishonest in that sense.
So did this complicate your performance?
I think it probably did.
Mm. For the better?
Well, I don't think so, but maybe people would disagree.
Well, you grew up in Perth, Australia. Would you describe what your area was like?
It's a very isolated city. I have been told, in fact, the first time I left the shores, I was told by a foreign journalist that it was the most isolated. Did you know that it's the most isolated city in the Western world? He couldn't possibly have realized what trauma he put me into.
That you didn't realize it was isolated?
Well, you know, they didn't tell us that when we were growing up. I mean, I had my suspicions, surrounded as I was by desert and the vast Indian Ocean.
What were some of the ideas that really shaped your idea of what it meant to be a woman and what your life would be like as a grown woman when you grew up?
God.
Did you think you had options?
Well, I had options in an intellectual sense. I mean, I could choose various careers. It was a fairly intellectual school, so, you know, I could be a lawyer or I wasn't good enough at science to be a doctor, but that was an option. There were those kinds of options. Yeah, there were. But for me personally, for my personal sense of survival in my family and the society that I lived in, that knew me, I felt the only option I had was to leave somehow.
To leave Australia?
To leave that city, to leave those people that somehow had defined me and my future in a certain way. I'm trying to be clear about this. I come from a problematic family too, where there were particular expectations. So
what do you mean by problematic?
Well, I guess everybody reacted differently to the 60s, didn't they? And I was 13 in 1968. So my mother especially had a decade of observing the disruptions of that of those years, and I think she was deeply threatened by it and alarmed for me, and overly protective. She would have been happiest if I'd stayed home with her every day, every night, just, I don't know, chatted or whatever. She was very protective.
So that probably made it even more important for you to leave.
Well, I think it forced me to leave. She was a woman that she was strongly resistant to change. I mean, she had her own complications too, personal complications. Really a smart, really clever woman who was, I think, extraordinarily frustrated. She had three children and had never had a career. She came from a very old-fashioned world where girls weren't supposed to work. It was bad form for girls to work if it meant that the father or the husband hadn't been able to provide for her. And she wanted to conform. She wanted to be liked. You know, this is, I think, often a great problem for me and probably other women, that just the pressure to be considered acceptable in all sorts of ways often makes us undersell ourselves. And I think my mother did that when she was younger. And then she got a bit sad about it all, distressed about it. I think her years from when she was 40 onwards were really disturbed years for her. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a short break and then we'll talk more about your life and your movies. My guest is actress Judy Davis. This is Fresh Air. Judy Davis is my guest, and she stars in the new movie Where Angels Fear to Tread, which is based on a novel by E.M. Forster. She's also starring in Naked Lunch. She's starred in the movies Impromptu, Passage to India, My Brilliant Career, and other films. you first left Australia, I believe, to tour as a singer with a rock band, a tour of the Far East. How did this get together?
It was really just a way of getting out of Perth, to be brutally frank. They gave me a ticket, and I had absolutely no money. And
you sang?
I did sing.
What kind of music was this?
Unspeakable music. I'm not sure I want to discuss it, but it did get me out of Perth and got me to Japan. I was 18, so it got me to Taiwan. Then the Vietnam War was in its closing years, and there were GIs everywhere, and girls going crazy on pills and desperate to get any American to marry them so they could get out of that, what seemed to me to be a godforsaken country. This is Taiwan, Taipei anyway, the city. Very disturbed time for them, I guess.
But it was a liberating tour for you?
It was tortuous, really. I was not at all prepared to be a singer. I mean, I wanted to be, but I wasn't prepared to be a singer in a rock band, and probably never would be.
When you started acting, was it difficult to unlock certain inhibitions?
Yeah, it was. It was difficult. Mm. It took a long time, too. It's taken years. In fact, it's a process I'm still going through. But it did. It took a long time.
How did you go about that process?
I think I was forced to dig out some fears. If it had been up to me, I'd be as hidden away and as secretive as I ever was. But the job itself forces you out. And you have no choice.
In unlocking inhibitions, did you use any, like, Stanislavski exercises, or was it something more independent or personal?
No, I think I swore a lot. No, it was nothing as grandiose as that. It's sometimes acting throws up very difficult, emotionally difficult, confronting experiences. And if you're to survive, there's just one way. You just have to go forward. You have to breathe through it. Literally, I've had to breathe through many experiences that I've had, but it's actually getting through them and surviving them and then trying as honestly as possible to evaluate what happened and how one performed personally and socially, that you may have a breakthrough, you may learn something.
Can you think of one
actually
of those,
having a child helped too?
Having a child helped. Can you think of a role that presented you with what you described as an emotionally confronting experience?
I think Passage to India certainly did that. It was confronting on all sorts of levels, really. First of all, there was India itself. I'd read a book before I got there by V.S. Nayapul, I hope I'm pronouncing his name properly, where he said that it was, in his view, incorrect to go to India and look at the beggars and think, oh, how dreadful this is, how sad this is, and I must give them money, or this is so sad. He said, that's wrong. You should get angry. You should get angry at the lack of organization in India, at the corruption in India, and that there is no need for these people to be starving if the country was organized correctly, that it's not an unavoidable tragedy. It's just very bad management and corruption. I think that's sort of what he said. So armed with this thought, I arrived in India, and I'd heard an English actress who'd done Jewel in the Crown, I think it was called, and she'd had the most extraordinary spiritual time there. She'd been up in a sort of a mountain retreat up the north. And I have to say that I was young, but India drove me crazy. I thought I was going to go out of my mind. I also thought I was going to die quite a few times because it's a very dangerous country as well. We had lots of drives at nights. Well, there was one in particular. We had to go to a place called Uti, which is down the south, and there was a great, I mean, it's fantastic, in fact, mountain road that we had to drive up. So dangerous. No, obviously, no lights. But it turned out that this, what looked to be minor mountain road, was like the main highway down the south. And there are these enormous trucks ploughing down this road, and us in this little car, and you'd come around a blind, many lots, every corner was a blind corner, and the driver would go, no, that's right. He'd actually start going around the corner, and then he'd beep his horn. Or where I come from, you beep your horn before you go around the corner, just in case there's somebody on the other side, so they know you're there. Oh, I was in the back, oh, sweating. I think there were tears streaming down my face, not because I was crying, but because every pore of my body was responding in some violent way to this drive. But we got there. We got to the top, and I was the only one who was really concerned. So So it was dangerous.
So besides this drive, what drove you out of your mind about India?
Well, there were other things too, riots and... But these are the negative things. It's a very confronting country, I think. Rather like Adela, I did feel very much like a bit of white bread there, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
These fantastic Indian women dressed often, usually, in saris. So essentially feminine. And, you know, I can have trouble dressing at the best of times, but I just didn't want to walk out the door in India. In fact, I finally did buy a sari of my own. And, oh, dear.
Wait, so you were going through some kind of crisis about femininity or something?
Well, my own sexuality, I think, at that time. And curiously, I just got married, too. So it really was... confronting. I could also possibly have been being influenced by the character I was playing in the film. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was her dilemma, absolutely her dilemma as well.
So all the things that were bothering you in India, you could use at least for the role.
Oh, yeah. But it was confronting, and it was difficult to resolve, and it took me years to resolve that. And of course, there was David Lean himself, who was a very frightening figure.
Frightening because of his personality, or because of the films that he'd already made?
Frightening because of his personality.
Uh-huh.
The films he made, I'd seen some of them, and that, you know, that it can make you initially nervous of somebody, their reputation, but that goes quickly, very quickly. But Lean was lacking in confidence himself, so he wasn't always, when he felt threatened, he wasn't generous. But then none of us are, I guess. Well, that is one of the great challenges to maintain a sense of humanity, no matter how threatened one feels. And of course, I was very threatened, and I wasn't very generous to him, I don't think, either. So that was a confronting thing. There was the final scene in that film was supposed to be Alec Guinness dancing on a huge wheel that had embossed characters on it and figures. If you've seen the film, he plays a Brahmin priest. So he'd been going to dance classes for months, and you'd see him going off through the hotel with these... a pair of huge symbols, wearing sandals, off to his dance class, and he had problems with his feet. They were swollen. It was difficult for him sometimes to walk comfortably, let alone dance on an embossed wheel. But anyway, he went off to his dance class with his cymbals, and you'd see him come back, banging the odd cymbal. And I think he was probably quite looking forward to this dance. But then something happened in the last month or so in India. I wasn't there. I'd gone back to England. They had some... Oh, I know what it was. When they came to film the scene of the dance on the Wheel of Life, Lean turned his camera... It was set up near a pond, a pool. Lean turned his camera towards the pool. And, no, I wasn't there, but I assume Alex said, excuse me, no, I'm here, the Wheel of Life is here. And Lean said... No, we're filming the reflection. It'll be marvellous. Alec Guinness, I mean, anybody could have been on the Wheel of Life. All those months of dance classes and cymbals. Anyway, Alec Guinness just wouldn't speak to him. They had this, it was a dreadful, dreadful row. Understandable. I mean, how perverse can you be? So back in England at the studio, they came to do the final scene of the film, which was, of course, to be Alec Guinness on the Wheel of Life. And suddenly it wasn't Alec Guinness on the Wheel of Life at all. It was me in a completely invented scene sitting in my room in England. And Lean, with great pride, grabbed my hand one day. Come with me, dear. Strode through three sound studios, finally came to the last studio where a set was being built with windows and a room and a desk, and this is the last scene of the film. And I can't repeat what he said, but it was ex Alec Guinness. That is a side of David that I guess not many people know. He was also irresistibly charming. Irresistibly charming.
Actress Judy Davis. She stars in the new film Where Angels Fear to Tread, and you can see her in a dual role in Naked Lunch. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.